Hi.
New York, New York, 10036. Pro country.
What you see is what you get.
Hell has no fury. He drives the most expensive car because second best never enters his mind.
Of all the billions of planets in space, only one is off limits to man.
It all began with a curse.
The evil you did this day will be avenged.
A curse.
From the mists of infinity, they come, rising from the cold, damp earth to take what is now theirs.
You are in a room filled with your friends, but they are all dead.
Night, when the earth is quiet, and the good people of the world are sleeping, the night visitor comes to call.
The streets have been taken over by thieves, dope addicts, rapists, muggers. We live in fear. One man is doing something about it.
These are the sounds of 6 feet of silver death.
Grindhouse Purgatory, 42nd Street, Pete.
It's been a while, but 42nd Street Pete is back to take us to the purgatory, that is the grindhouse.
Yeah, it has been a while. Sadly, we have to start off with a little bit of tributes to certain people. Since we last been on, we've lost Herschel Gordon Lewis, we've lost Ted V. Michaels, and we've lost the cool ghoul Zachary. Honestly, if it wasn't for H.G. Lewis, we wouldn't have the gore film as we know it today. H.G. Lewis and his partner Dave Friedman took a wild chance back in 1963 and came up with a film called Blood Feast, which probably today looks pretty amateurish, and actually back then it looked pretty amateurish, but it was like the first of its kind. It shocked the shit out of people, even shocked the shit out of H.G. and Dave, because they never knew it was going to actually draw that much money. And they, of course, rushed the sequel out, right? Not a sequel, but another gore-type film out called 2000 Maniacs, pretty close to when Blood Feast was out. I believe they did one other film together as a team. It might have been Color Me Blood Red. Then Dave left, and Herschel continued with Wizard of Gore, Taste of Blood, whatever. Met Herschel in the early days of Chiller Theater when it was Horrorthon. I believe it was the second show. Again, the man was shocked by the fans that he had, never thought that his stuff would go anywhere. And it's pretty much of a, you know, great guy up until the very end. Unfortunately, his last show was Chiller Theater, and he was in a scooter when he did it, and he passed away a few months after that. Ted Michaels, on the other hand, was a friend of mine. Again, I had met Ted at Chiller Theater. Ted was a gregarious guy. When you were a friend of his, you were a friend for life. You, Josh, will remember that Ted was my guest many times on the old Grindhouse show going back when I was on Saturday night at 10 o'clock at night.
I never actually spoke to Ted, but I listened not just on your show, on numerous other shows. I listened to him, and he always seemed like everybody's favorite grandfather.
Oh yeah, Ted was just a friendly guy. Ted's big love was making movies. I believe he was filming up until the day he passed away, probably. As poor as health as he was in, the last time I talked to him, he was in a scooter. He was in a lot of pain. He had a bad back and nothing was helping it. But he'd bitch about how shitty he was feeling, but then would say, well, you know, this new camera I got is really fantastic. Let me tell you about this. So movies were his life, and a lot of people would dismiss his stuff as schlock, but for a guy who basically had no money, no budgets, he put out a pretty good product. And, you know, the Corpse Grinders, Blood Orgy of the She-Devils, the
Astro
Doll Squad.
Zombies.
Astro Zombies. I mean, these were all little groundbreakers in their own right. And, you know, Ted just loved to make movies. He loved his fans. He was my first Grindhouse panel at Cinema Wasteland, along with Gary Kent. We did do a tribute show to him. Gary came on, and Maureen Gaffney came on, who was in his first film, One Shocking Moment. And if you go on Jackalope, I'm sure you'll find a link to that show. And unfortunately, last week, we lost another guy who I was friends with, childhood idol, big influence on my childhood, the Cool Ghouls, John Zacherle, made it till 98. Horror host supreme. He was the one who set the bar for all the horror hosts that came after him. Another great guy, was active up until a couple years ago. His last chiller was last October. Then he retired, and unfortunately, because of declining health and things like that, he's no longer with us, you know, and we have to pay homage to these guys because these were the guys that, you know, were the groundbreakers and started all this shit.
Most people would know Zacherle nowadays as the voice of Elmer in Hettenlotter's Brain Damage.
Yeah, he was also the crazy weatherman in Frankenhooker, and maybe something you don't know, when the hippie movement started back in the 60s, Zach was a DJ on several alternative rock shows, pushing the new stuff. He actually emceed a show in Central Park where the Grateful Dead performed. So there was a guy who stayed with it and was pretty hip, you know, all his life. Just went with the flow.
See, he's one I never got to meet, but I do have an autographed photo of him that one of my listeners got for me at a con when they met him. So I do have an autographed to Josh photograph of Zacherle. So that's pretty damn cool, honestly. Because I heard in real life he was one of the nicest fucking guys you could ever meet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He was the first celebrity I ever met when Chiller first started. The first show was Horrorthon. I was his bodyguard for the day, and when it came time to do his thing, the fucking power blew out, and we ran a drop light with one light bulb, which he held under his face and did his shtick for about an hour, just like that. So, amazing guy, just a great guy.
Do you think that, though, like, with this happening, this is indicative of, I mean, is the Grindhouse gonna die? I mean, these people are passing. On Radiodrome recently, we talked about how Romero and Carpenter and Sam Raimi and all this, that we consider them the greats, but they're dying off. Maybe not physically dying, but, you know, they're stopping their careers. Do you think that the Grindhouse film, as you knew it, and as what we're talking about, is sort of going away?
Well, it'll never go away as long as there's guys like me around to keep, you know, reminding people of where it came from. As far as Romero, Carpenter, and Raimi go, it seems like nobody's throwing any money toward them to get any projects off the ground. We would both have to admit that Romero's last couple zombie films sort of sucked.
Yeah.
Carpenter, for whatever reason, they don't seem to be wanting to give him a shot at doing anything. I don't know why. He was always a good director. I was always, you know, entertained by his stuff. But, you know, it's like you had said you had gone to a screening in Night of the Living Dead and there was only 10 people there.
Mm-hmm.
Before I left New York, and this was Halloween of maybe 2006 or 7 or something like that, before the Pioneer closed up, reran Night of the Living Dead at midnight. It was a packed house and people reacted just the way they reacted back in 68.
See, when I went... early October of this year, and there was maybe 10 people in there, I mean, counting my girlfriend and myself, 12 maybe, and most of them were making fun of the movie and laughing at it, and I just kind of had this, what is wrong with you people? This is one of the best films ever made, and you're fucking making fun of it. The same thing happened with a couple of days before Halloween. My girlfriend and I went to go see the original John Carpenter's Halloween in the theater. And maybe a dozen people there this time. And they're making fun of the hairstyles and whatnot. Which really got me thinking, is this a dead genre? Is the new generation ever going to embrace a Grindhouse film for what it was? Or is it that kitschy schlock?
I don't know if it's a dead issue because there's still a lot of stuff that hasn't been uncovered and there's still a lot of stuff that has been cleaned up and put out. I just think that your movie-going public and your millennials or whatever the fuck they call them, the people that still live in mommy and daddy's basement until they're 40 or whatever they fucking do, they just have a bad attitude toward film in general. I mean, I saw Night of the Living Dead on the bottom half of a double bill when Last House on the Left came out.
So that would have been 72, 73 maybe?
72, and people left when Night of the Living Dead came on. And I was pissed off. But after you sat through Last House on the Left, you had to chuckle at something. So I could understand that. But to blatantly make fun of the film, which basically was the first actual American horror film. I mean, yeah, we put out a bunch of stuff with giant insects and radioactive mutants and big bugs. And, of course, you know, we dredged up Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, all the classic horrors and stuff like that. But the America never had a horror film that they could call its own, its original. And Night of the Living Dead was the first original American horror film.
Do you think do you think then that it's kind of just the fact that it's black and white, the fact that the hairstyles are a little bit dated, that it's not politically correct? I remember somebody who, a horror host who showed the movie maybe 5-6 years ago on a local station, had to warn people of the scene where Ben smacks Barbara because a black man smacking a white woman like that. And he's like, well, you gotta remember it was the 60s. Yeah,
oh,
and?
Fuck that stuff. You know something? Stick the PC shit up your ass. It's a fucking movie. Romero took a hell of a chance casting a black man in the lead, and he didn't cast the guy, Dwayne Jones, in the lead because he was black. He cast him because he was right for the part. That's what happened.
And he gives a good performance, too.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, all this PC shit goes out the fucking window. I just watched a film. Now, here's something you probably never have seen. The Olga films.
I've seen White a few Slave. Of them.
Okay, White, there's only three that actually work because of Audrey Campbell being Olga. White Slaves of Chinatown, Olga's Girls, which is the best of the batch, and Olga's House of Shame, which is the worst of the batch.
I don't remember I don't remember which one I've seen, but I have seen one or two of them.
Now, remember when Mark of the Devil's big selling point was the tongue getting ripped out?
Actually, I remember Mark of the Devil's big selling point was the vomit bag it came with.
Yeah, but when their big scene, their quote, big gross scene was the tongue getting ripped
out.
Well, in Olga's Girls, they do that verbatim with a pair of pliers and a fucking carpet knife. And it looks infinitely worse than the one that was in Mark of the Devil simply because it was low budget and cheesy and black and white. Now, there's a group of films, and this was 64, that basically completely pushed the envelope because it dealt with drugs, horrors, prostitution, drug addiction, drug pushers, actually had people shooting up on fucking screen, all kinds of weird shit. Now, I don't even know how that flew back then. It was only playing at the adults-only stuff, and of course, I was like 12 years old, so I never saw this shit. I did see Olga's Girls on the bottom half of a triple bill somewhere in the 70s, and I probably blew it off because I'm not into bondage and S&M and shit like that. But being that the next issue of Grindhouse Purgatory is going to be a women in Grindhouse, I felt that, you know, time to revisit these things and, you know, write up them. So that's what I did. But, you know, a lot of films, you know, haven't lost their luster or can't be topped after a lot of years. I mean, you can do all the, you know, you bring up Halloween. As far as I'm concerned, Rob Zombie's Halloween sucked.
Oh,
all of a sudden, Michael Myers is a white trash fucking, you know, Trailer Park Kid. The violence in it was way the fuck over the top, and we both had this thing on Facebook about the initial episode of Walking Dead where basically, and a lot of people are gonna dispute this, was basically torture porn. You don't have to turn someone's head into fucking jelly on network TV just to get your point across. But that's what they went for.
Well, see, with Halloween though, and I haven't seen the movie until I saw it a couple of weeks ago. I haven't seen the original Halloween in probably 15 years, okay?
Yeah.
It didn't hold up for me, so maybe I'm part of the problem. I found the movie, maybe it's the editor in me. I'm like, this scene is really slow, you could have tightened it up here, this scene needs this. Maybe it's the editor in me, but I just found the movie to be, I don't know, frankly, tedious.
Well, it was Carpenter's second film.
I know.
It was also one of the highest grossing independent films ever made because nobody ever done anything like that before. But yeah, any of this stuff's going to come across dated, especially, you know, stuff from the 60s and 70s. You know, they bitch about, you know, the porn films then were this and that and the other thing. Well, all these guys are restoring the porn films and like, you don't need to see a porn film in a 4K scan. I'm sorry, you don't.
Yeah, but maybe you really want to see that pimple on her vagina.
Maybe, but a lot of people don't. Even people in the industry, the old-timers, say, this is a waste of fucking time. But, you know, who am I to dispute the, you know, the spending public? Well, I mean,
okay,
you know.
Okay, speaking of the spending public, Now, we all love Mystery Science Theater 3000. I assume you do. I think, right. Mystery Science Theater was a brilliant show when it was brilliant. Trust me, they had duds too.
Oh yeah.
But there's a weird perception issue when it comes to, like, Mystery Science Theater, the Mystery Science Theater effect, where people think Mystery Science Theater was about making fun of bad movies. And they had a lot of Grindhouse movies on that show. And people immediately assume, well, it was on MST3K, therefore it's a bad movie. And they think that when they see it without Mike and the Bots or Joel and the Bots over it. And that's what they don't understand. This new generation is being raised that Grindhouse films were goofy schlock. And I think that, I mean, yes, as much as we bitch about Tarantino, he is one of the champions of they're not schlock. And that's what I don't like. I don't like people immediately, oh, the Grindhouse movies, they were so bad. I remember when I showed my brother's only 4 years younger than me, Dawn of the Dead for the first time. He could not take it seriously because of the afros on the zombies.
Well, also, whatever the hell Tom Savini was thinking back then, that blood photographed way too red.
Oh yeah, it looked fake. But to be fair, Romero said he kind of wanted to make this like it was a comic book. So in that regard, the blood works. Cause it's a very comic book effect.
Well, when you look at the three films, Night, Dawn, and Day, Dawn doesn't hold up at all. Night holds up and Day holds up.
Day is actually the best of that trilogy, honestly.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It pretty much is. Because it got more grimmer, and if Romero had been given the budget he had wanted, but the restriction was he would have to bring it in as an R, which nobody would have been able to tolerate, it would have been an epic. But, you know, he wasn't about to fuck his fans and wasn't about to abandon his vision. So it came in a little bit, you know, under what he wanted to, but still, it probably is, like what you say, one of the best of the three.
Well, but then let's go back to Tarantino and Rodriguez's Grindhouse, the Miramax one from a few years ago.
Yeah.
People didn't understand that. I mean, people literally left after Planet Terror because they didn't understand what a double feature was anymore. And it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's why I'm saying, is this a lost cause on this new generation?
Well, there's some people that embrace it. There's some people that think they're above it. I don't care, but you're not, you know, your whole Grindhouse perception is based on a lot of people think Grindhouse is strictly horror films, and it's not. It's spaghetti westerns. It's biker films. It's sexploitation. It's hardcore porn. It's kung fu. It's regular westerns. There, you know, the Dirty Dozen's a Grindhouse film because the Dirty Dozen and the Magnificent Seven kicked off what is known as the ensemble cast, where basically you're introduced to a group of characters that you start to care about, and you really get upset when half of them get knocked off at the end of the film. So they were Grindhouse films. The Wild Bunch, there's an epic Grindhouse film because that was the one who set the bar for graphic violence on screen. So a lot of things fall into the Grindhouse universe that people don't really understand. They don't really understand the term. But the whole thing was, in the words of David Friedman, these theaters ground out films 24/7, or at least what they claim 24/7, you know, night and day. So, you know, there was a lot of films that, you know, I'll give you the, you know, we're going back to the Tarantino thing. His film Death Proof would have opened on a Wednesday and would have been yanked out before Friday because nobody would have went to see the fucking thing. It was too talky. A Grindhouse film isn't talky. Now, the other thing people don't realize is what I just said, because I managed the drive-in back in the day. The films came out on a Wednesday strictly because the exhibitors wanted to see if they were drawing by Friday. So they knew they would have a box office weekend, and if the film wasn't really drawing on a Wednesday or a Thursday, by Friday they would yank it out and it would go on a shelf somewhere and nobody would ever see it again.
To be fair though, Rodriguez's Planet Terror did feel like a Grindhouse film.
Oh, it did. That was the only one it did. I'm not knocking him. He actually gets it, and he actually admitted he never set foot in a Grindhouse. Where Tarantino has people bullshitted that, oh, Tarantino grew up watching Grindhouse films with an all-black audience. My math is right. That would have been around 83 and everything was shutting down by then. So that's all fucking bullshit. And he actually had a pretty well-known critic convinced that this was the truth, and I had to set the guy straight. And the guy came at me pretty hard and I says, do the math. I said,
42nd Street was basically starting in its death throes when Make Them Die Slowly was on the marquee of the Liberty, and it was probably the most prophetic title ever slapped on a grindhouse marquee on 42nd Street, because that was the area was in its death throes then and basically died out by the end of the 80s, early 90s. So, no, he never saw these fucking films in a grindhouse, period.
What do you think, then, about the people who say that, you know, the grindhouse is gone? And the new grindhouse is the asylum and, you know, the direct-to-video intentionally poorly made schlock. Because I disagree with that, because grindhouse movies, for the most part, were not intentionally made to be bad. Yes, some of them were bad, but they weren't made to be bad. Whereas the asylum movies, they know their shit. You know, they're going in with this whole tongue planted firmly in cheek, nudge, nudge, wink, wink. They're making, quote, grindhouse movies, according to them. Grindhouse style movies, according to a lot of their critics. And they don't seem to get it.
Oh, I can end this right now. You want to make a grindhouse movie? Build a time machine and go back to the 60s. Then you can make a grindhouse movie. The whole thing was a fucking deal that started in the early... I can even go back further, in the late 50s, and peaked in the mid 80s, and that was it. You know, everybody wants to, like, shall we say, raise the bar on shit like that. You can't. The reason Cannibal Holocaust worked was because no one ever did anything like it before. The reason Emmanuel in America worked was because no one ever did it like that before. The reason The Wild Bunch worked like it did, because nobody ever did any of this shit before. Now it's all been done, and like anybody's attempt to like redo this shit or try to revision it is fucking bullshit, because there is no such thing as a grindhouse anymore. So you're not making grindhouse films. You're not even making homages. You're just self-stroking yourself, and you got a legion of fucking people out there that, excuse me, are too fucking stupid to realize what's going on. Now, if that insults some of the listeners, I'm sorry. But you know something? Go back in time. And like I said, the reason a lot of this shit worked was because it had never been done before. And that's the only reason it worked.
But then, on the positive side, why do you think that these grindhouse movies, the old ones that are coming out on DVD and whatnot nowadays, even if they're coming out on a shitty, you know, 50 movies for $10 box set, why do you think they are finding an audience with the right people now? People like me. I was born in 75. By the time I was old enough to walk into a grindhouse, they were gone. But I love these movies. Do you think that they're now finding the younger audience that they should be?
Well, yeah, here's the thing. Before home video, if you wanted to see this stuff, and like I'm going back to the Olga thing, because the Olga had, you know, people who worked in the industry or worked in those theaters told me that Olga always had repeat viewers. You could just see the same people coming in all the time. You had to go see this shit in a movie theater. You didn't have home video. The only other option you had was renting a 16mm print, which would have been cost prohibitive. So when this stuff came out on VHS, it was like a fucking candy store opening up. Okay, yeah, the transfers sucked and they were grainy and shit, but for those of us who had never seen this shit before, this was great stuff. Now, you know, throwing all those movies onto like 50 movies on a DVD or whatever, yeah, there's certain stuff that you can get away with because nobody owns the rights to it. What's been happening is, and we both know this, that a lot of companies are going in. I'll give you a bad example of The Exterminator, which was put out by Synapse. The Exterminator ran under 90 minutes, and that was because they took out all the fucking bullshit. But in doing that, they also, for the censors, took out a couple gore scenes. Synapse restored the thing to like almost a 2-hour running time with a romantic subplot, which sucked, and it was almost watching like a TV movie. What they should have done was just throw in the clips of the gore that was taken out to begin with, and it would have been okay. But, you know, there's such a thing as you're polishing up a turd that shines too fucking brightly. Then it isn't what it was supposed to be. A lot of this shit worked because of the running time that it was cut down to. 2 hours for The Exterminator, way too much. The guys that are really doing it and doing it right are Grindhouse Releasing. Those are the guys that, you know, come up with Cannibal Holocaust, The Beyond, which was released as Seven Doors to Death over here. make them die slowly. Cannibal Ferox, they just did a Blu-ray on I Drink Your Blood, and they actually came up with that clunker black and white thing, which another thing was thrown on the shelf because it was originally released as Voodoo Bloodbath and wound up on late night TV as Zombies.
Is that the one that's basically Gilligan's Island as a horror film?
Pretty much.
Okay,
yeah.
I haven't seen that one in forever. I just remember I'm like, well, they've got the skipper and his first mate and the rich person and his wife and the model. And I'm like, this is fucking Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, pretty much. Jerry Gross just threw that in because he probably bought it on the cheap from Del Tenney, who made it. Weirdly, I just spoke to William Graffay, who did Death Curse of Tartu, The Hook Generation, and stuff like that. He's the only guy alive that was involved in that film, and Grindhouse Releasing contacted him to do something with it. So, you know, again, like I say, here's a film that was pulled off the market before it hit Friday, thrown on a shelf, and okay, well, you know, I can use this. I'll just retitle it to put it on the bottom half of a double bill with I Drank Your Blood, and it worked. Not that anybody really gave a shit about it because it sucked, but, you know, that's the original feature.
But then do you think that the movies are kind of being shuffled off as nothing when they are 50 movies for $10? Do you think that the movies don't have any value anymore?
No, they do. If that's the only way you can get them, that's the only way you can get them. You know, like I said, you know, certain companies have pulled shit out of the woodwork. One of the guys that I deal with, Pop Cinema, they pulled up Women's Prison Massacre, which had been lost. They put that out. So, you know, certain companies are digging it up. And like you say, some of these prints have been battered around so much that it's really hard to find complete prints. Luckily, you know, guys like Blue Underground, you know, Bill Lustig could go over to Italy and find vault elements to put together and things like that. That's the way to do it. You know, just finding a beat up 35 millimeter print and throwing it on, you know, a DVD, or basically, you know, what a lot of these budget labels are is VHS transfers.
The most ironic thing, Pete, is I saw one of those, you know, 50 movies for $10 sets at Walmart on Blu-ray. Yeah. And, you know, Blu-ray is supposed to be ultra high definition. One of them was Oasis of the Zombies on what looks to be a third or fourth generation VHS print where most of the film is ghosted. It's ghost imaged through. And you're like, you really don't understand what Blu-ray is, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what it is too. A lot of the so-called Blu-rays are nothing but DVD transfers onto a Blu-ray. They're nothing special.
Well, in this case, it's probably a VHS transfer onto a Blu-ray.
Yeah, yeah. But like, I've picked up stuff for resale and watched a couple of them before I sold them. And I'm like, damn, my regular DVD is just as good as this Blu-ray. So why would I want to keep this?
I've actually found in some cases my VHS is better than some of these cheap 50 movies for $10 sets. I look at that and I'm like, you realize the version I recorded off of HBO in 1981 is a better print and has better audio than your supposed transfer here, right? That's the set. Yeah. You remember the War of the Worlds TV series from 1988?
No, I wasn't big on TV back then. I usually was out at night, so I really didn't watch any of this stuff.
It ran for 2 seasons. I taped every episode. So I have my episodes on tape on SLP speed. Okay? They are higher quality video-wise than the official DVDs put out by Paramount. That should not happen.
I know. Well, you know, a lot of these companies, you know, are run by younger people who don't see the value in older stuff. I'll give you an example of something that happened. I don't know whether I was responsible for this or not. You know, a lot of Lee Van Cleef stuff had never come out, his spaghetti westerns. Wild East, which I know the owner of the guy, he's a great guy, had put out Day of Anger from Elements he picked up, had put out Death Rides a Horse, but a lot of the other stuff wasn't put out. Now, when they had done the restoration of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, you know, the almost 3-hour version, I emailed Sony, which owned the rights to it, and I says, don't you think that it's time to release some of the Van Cleef stuff, being that you guys did so well with The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly? Never got an answer, but 2 months after I emailed the guy, they put out a Sabata box set. So, you know, I don't know whether I had anything to do with it or not, but I certainly rattled the cage to get it done.
But see, in a lot of cases, and this isn't exactly the same, but in a lot of cases, they just don't care. Like in the mid-90s, there was a TV show Spielberg put out called Earth 2 that ran on NBC. And the episodes, it was continuity-based, but the episodes were aired wildly out of order. For instance, what's clearly supposed to be the third episode was actually aired after the series finale. So one of the big selling points on the DVD was in the original air date order, which is not the order the episodes take place, something that's easily fixable, right? So I emailed Universal and asked them why they did this, and he's like, because this is the order that they aired. And I said, but it's not the order they take place. He goes, but it's the air date order. And he just could not understand, why are these episodes not in the order they take place? And they knew this, Pete, because there was a little insert in my DVD set that told you what order the episodes are supposed to be watched in. But they couldn't be bothered to master them in that order. That's either lazy or you don't fucking get it, do you?
Well, a lot of these people have no love for the business. They only think what's now and they don't give a shit about what came before it. That's the problem. I mean, you know, a lot of people respect things that you and I do and a lot of people don't, obviously from the Facebook posts. But, you know, the whole thing is, I'm going to do this until I fucking had it. You know, people say about, you know, the magazine, well, you know, you don't have an internet presence, you don't have this, you don't have that. No, because I don't want people to read it for fucking free. That's why. I'm not making any money on this deal. But God damn it, you want to read it, you fucking pay for it. It's a fucking art form. It's a form of entertainment. Everybody's so used to ripping everybody the fuck off. Well, guess what? It's never going to have an internet presence.
Well, but then that's part of the problem, too. Before we wrap, we got to talk about Diabolique magazine's gone away. Scary Monsters magazine wrapped this year. Tim Lucas just announced Video Watchdog can't make it anymore as a physical magazine. We're losing the classic magazines left and right.
Yeah, but you know why you're losing them? Because you depend on the fucking newsstands like Barnes & Noble who don't give a shit, because if you walk in there, and I'll say this, I know you work for a couple of these guys, if there's 10 issues of Fangoria in there at the beginning of the month, them 10 are there at the end of the month, they're all dog-eared because they let people sit there and fucking read them for nothing. Same with Horror Hound. Same with Room Org. The whole secret of this business, I found out the hard way, was, because believe me when I tell you, I'm not in this for the money, because I'm lucky if I break even on this shit, and we both know that. I did a deal, my deal was with Amazon, print on demand, okay? The magazine sells, okay, let's go with issue eight just came out, which should sell enough copies on Amazon to enable me to produce 100 copies of issue 9, which will be sold at Cinema Wasteland and sold through Facebook to people who can't get to Cinema Wasteland. Everybody else buys it off Amazon. And the weird part is, a lot of industry people have been reading the damn thing, which I pointed out. I'm not going to mention names because people will think I'm stroking myself. But I shared that with you over Facebook. And the other thing is, too, most of the damn sales are from Europe and Asia. So go figure. What is it? The people in this country don't know how to fucking read or just don't want to spend money?
I think it's a little bit of both, and I think that's how we'll wrap this up. So, Pete, where can people contact you?
You can't. That's it. You can't right now. I'm in limbo because I've had issues with people ripping off my character, ripping off my fucking items, and there was a couple bogus websites up there with my fucking name. Right now, you want to get me, it's Pete Chiarella on Facebook, or you can email me at 40deuce@hotmail.com. Maybe there'll be a website in the future. I don't know, but I gotta find people I can work with who, like me, have no fucking egos.
This has been a 1201 Beyond production. Find it and other great content at 1201beyond.com.